Okay, thanks everybody. It's a little bit before 5 on Friday, the 8th of December, 2023. We're back on the record in the matter of the appeal of the critical area buffer reduction. Notice of administrative decision 22-02629. And do we want to take up where we're going next week right now? Should we
Yeah,
do
that'd be
that?
nice.
Okay. Okay. And Mr. Telegin, you said that you needed how many hours are you estimating you'll need? And I understand there'll be cross-examination as well.
I would say 2 to 2.5 is what I would need for direct. I'm hoping that that is quite conservative. That's what I would say.
Okay, so if we are looking for maybe a 4 hour block of time.
I think so. I think 4 hours should be sufficient.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I just have to find out where Mr. Rosine contacted me with his availability for next week.
Okay. Well, for my standpoint, Tuesday and Thursday are not available. Friday is my preferred day. Actually, let me take that back. Oh, I'm
We
so
can't
sorry.
do Friday. We've got a hearing all day Friday.
Okay. Monday could work.
I am not available on Monday.
Okay.
All right.
Wednesday then?
Did you say Wednesday? Did anybody address Wednesday?
Wednesday at noon works for me.
Maybe the second half.
Yes.
Well, I have a 2 o'clock. I have a 2 o'clock that day.
Yeah, I've got something at 3 to 5 on Wednesday and from 9 till 9:30 or 10 on Wednesday.
Okay. Well, I hate to have to go the following week. I'm pretty, well, no, I'm wide open on Monday the 18th. Wednesday I could make work. Thursday I'm open, and Friday the 22nd I'm open. Well, no, Friday I have a 10 o'clock, but we could do afternoon on Friday the 22nd.
Yeah, so I'm available Friday the 22nd. I'm not available Monday the 18th. And unfortunately, Mr. Rosine only gave his availability for next week. But I could try calling him off camera if you would, if you'd prefer that. I mean, the only other alternative would be to set a date and then I immediately get back to you as soon as I can with confirmation as to whether that would work.
Okay. Ms. Liao and Mr. Getches, what does Friday the 22nd look like? I mentioned I have a 10 o'clock, but it's a 1 hour, so I could block out that entire afternoon. That works for my schedule.
It does work for me. I'm hoping we, it'd be nice if we could do it sooner. I'm just hoping we can eventually wrap this up.
Yes.
We can do Friday the 22nd. I think that's the only date I'm hearing that everyone's sort of coalescing around.
Ms. Wilson, I think you're muted if you were talking to us. You might be talking to somebody else, though. Okay.
Me, so I'm just checking. I'm not available, but Caitlin can stand in and clerk. So for
Okay.
the 22nd.
If that's the date that we that works for the witness and all of us, three attorneys and one examiner.
Nine to five on Friday.
I have a 10 o'clock. I could try to move that. I would suggest that we block out that afternoon, or starting at 11. I mean, for whatever time it takes. I could also look into moving my 10 o'clock on Friday the 22nd.
And what time are we talking about on the 22nd?
My preference would be from any time from 11 on. And it sounds like we're needing a block of about 4 hours.
I can certainly block that off.
No worse for us.
Okay, 11 a.m. on 12/22.
Should we just say 11 a.m. to 5?
Just to cover our bases.
Just to cover it, and there's no point in doing 11 to 4.
I just want to bring up, so 5 o'clock would be a hard stop for county for clerking. So it would have to be done and over 5 o'clock, no over.
And that's 6 hours. That should be hopefully more than sufficient. I'm looking forward to seeing my family again. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Sounds like we're going to block out the time 11 to 5 on 12/22 for what I want to be very optimistic in saying is the last day of testimony. Okay. All right. Anything else that we need to address before Mr. Telgen calls his next witness?
So.
Okay.
And I call Mr. Joe Lubischer.
Okay. Hello again, Mr. Lubischer.
Good afternoon.
Hi there. I'm going to swear you in again, even though I know you've been sworn in before. Please raise your right hand. Do you swear from the testimony you give today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Great. Thank you. All right, Mr. Telgen.
Okay. One procedural matter. I don't think I asked for, when I showed Ms. Cook all those photographs from Exhibit R33, I don't think I asked for that to be admitted. Can I have that admitted?
Okay. Ms. Liao, I know that you had objections to admission of those additional photographs that, it is late, that Ms. Bartlett took. Did you want to state anything further on the record the about
objections your objections still stand? Yeah, we did not have Ms. Bartlett testify to them. We did not ask for their inclusion, and we were told that we should not be introducing more exhibits. So we pared ours down, and we took that out. So again, same objection. So
understood. All right. Thank you. I did indicate that we will that those additional photographs will be admitted. So Ms. Walston, please make note of that. Okay. All right. Are you ready to proceed with Mr. Lubischer?
I am. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Lubischer.
Good evening.
So I'd like to start by going back to the testimony of Christopher Wright. And part of Mr. Wright's testimony concerned a memorandum that he submitted as the applicant's exhibit R3. This was a memorandum concurring with Ms. Bartlett that Wetlands Q2, Q1, and 302 likely no longer exist. Okay. And I'm just going to show you that memorandum first. And here we have him saying that he's explaining why these wetlands no longer exist. And first he talks about wetland Q1, and he says the shallow water table and soil saturation observed in the 2019 Radicke investigation is most likely the result of recent precipitation and timber harvest activities that occurred in 2017, which would have contributed more surface water runoff and less transpiration. And when I spoke with him about this, he agreed with me, or I guess he confirmed, that what he meant was there had been some logging that occurred in 2007. And when the logging occurred, because the vegetation was gone, that then would generate more surface runoff from those areas into the area of Q1, Q2, and 302, right? Making the ground wetter. But then, you know, since then, the forest has sort of begun to come back. And so now, looking at it in 2023, the lack of that surface water runoff
would explain why we no longer see wetland conditions in Q1, Q2, and 302. Were you here for that bit of his testimony?
I did, and I also read the memo here.
Very good. So I showed him a Google Earth image. And this Google Earth image shows sort of a before, a before date in 2016, before the logging he was referencing occurred. Mm-hmm. Then it shows an image in 2017 and then an image afterwards in 2018. So I'm just going to trip through those with you again. So in this image, he had indicated that wetlands Q2, Q1, 302 are roughly in this area.
That's how I read it.
What's that?
That's how I read it from the wetland mapping, yes.
Fair enough. And then we see an image of logging that occurred. And he confirmed that this was, in fact, the logging that he was thinking of that would have reduced surface flow. Or I'm sorry, the logging would have increased surface flow to wetlands Q1, Q2, and 302. Are you familiar with those areas that have been logged?
Generally, yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you know where Crab Apple Creek is in relation to those logging areas?
Oh, certainly. So Crab Apple Creek is it's a bifurcated creek. So you've got a coming up from the saltwater to the north, you've got a main channel going directly from north to south. And at about the south end of the hill bend site, if you go to the left, a little bit more, somewhere right in there is the fork where those, where the east, it's the confluence of the east and west fork. Mm-hmm. And the west fork heads pretty much southwest down between the two log areas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the east fork kind of curls east just a little bit and then it proceeds more southerly.
Mm-hmm.
That's like this. Generally where it was. Yeah.
Okay.
And those two channels, they're both pretty steeply incised by comparison to the main channel. Mm. And the wetlands 302, Q1, Q2 all fall to the east side of the East Fork.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So fair to say the wetlands Q1, Q2, and 302... those are located on the east fork of Crab Apple Creek. The logging occurred, on the east side. The logging occurred on the west side.
That's correct. And, you know, when you do log, you get the more runoff, like he says. But, you know, that division of the east fork is pretty significant as far as any surface water effects. No, like I said, it's rather steeply incised, and the logging to the southwest of those three wetlands is just not going to have any effect on the surface water or near surface hydrology that supported 302, Q1, and Q2.
Right. I mean, another way of putting that is if we were looking at, for example, surface flow, and this is what Mr. Wright said he was talking about, was surface flow coming off of those logging areas. For surface flow to come off those logging areas and then get to wetlands Q2, Q1, and 302, that water would have to first flow downhill to Crab Apple Creek, right?
Yes.
And then it would have to flow uphill to get to Q1, Q2, and 302.
Seems pretty obvious, yes.
Okay. Now we've heard in this appeal a lot about vested rights, or at least we have from Mr. Heacock, and what was vested back then and what they're proposing now. Do you have any thoughts to share on that and how it relates to our appeal?
Well, my understanding and reading of the 2009 hearing examiner decision and the 2010 development agreement is that, you know, the ability to construct 751 homes on the Arborwood site was vested. and the ability to get to those homes was vested. And so it was clear that, you know, you were going to have to build some roads and bridges to do that. And it was recognized during the 2009 hearings that that would impact wetlands and or buffers. And so it was written into the 2009 code that the development would have to abide by the critical area ordinance, the 2007 version. The hearing examiner did not, however, tell the developer how to do that. And it's up to the developer to propose designs that meet those critical area criteria. And in specifically, you know, buffer averaging was specifically mentioned in the 2009 hearing decision. So whatever, you know, we are not critiquing the 2009 decision for vetting the things I mentioned, the plat and the building the houses and crossing the streams, but we are critiquing the developer's failure to provide designs that meet the buffer averaging criteria, and, you know, specifically including the buffer reductions and the adverse impacts that we've identified for water quantity and water quality.
Right. And as we saw earlier, the 2009 plat had a condition saying buffer averaging proposals would be evaluated on a case-by-case basis.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a case to be evaluated.
Fair enough.
You know, that's true of phase four, phase five, phase six, the North Crossing, the South Crossing, and the Utility Corridor. Mm-hmm. They all have to... My reading of those agreements is they have to meet the buffer averaging requirements, you know, right, or some other process. I mean, they could go down the variance road, for example. It's their choice.
I see. Now, today we heard testimony from Carolyn Decker critiquing your view based on the prior Radtke report. And a prior Zipper report that, you know, the construction of the spine road and the placement of fill material, permanent compacted fill material, would have an impact on water reaching wetland P2. Now, we just heard that today. But can you start us off on a response to what Ms. Decker had to say?
Ooh. One specific thing, is that it seemed to, as I understood what she was saying that there was an extensive perch groundwater body at 9 to 10 feet deep in the holes they took a look at. Now, right off the bat, I want to say there's a misconception here. I mean, the nature of perch groundwater bodies is that they're usually somewhat limited in extent, and they're, you know, saying that the water is going to come from miles away. That's not true here. It is true for a regional groundwater body, which is much deeper and, you know, below the phenomena we're talking about. I took a look at the holes where she had found, the what she was calling perch groundwater, and which may have been, you know, small bodies of perch groundwater, but she was saying those were 9 to 10 feet deep, and these were all along the kind of upper hillside of the west side of Crabapple Creek. So there were 16 borings and 9 test pits. The 16 borings went to 11 feet. The 9 pits went to 12 to 13 feet. So there were 25 of those. And there were only 3 of those that they flagged as having water in.
So, and let me kind of stop right there. Are we talking about Radtke's prior report from 2021?
We're talking about Terra's 2021 report.
Yeah, yeah. My mistake. I get confused. This one, right?
Yes.
Terra Associates from July of 2021. So when you reference all of those borings and test pits, you're referring to this document.
I am.
Okay. Go on.
Well, maybe it'd be worth going down to the figure two. And if we can get that north up, that would be useful.
Yeah, figure two. There we go.
Okay. Yeah, very good. All righty. So at the north end, we've got nine test pits.
Up here?
Yes. Okay. So you see those are, right up fairly close to the Hillbend property line, and then on the north side of the Hillbend property. So those are all a little bit up the hill. TP1, 2, and 3 are at about the, roughly similar elevation as the east end of P2 there. But then if you scroll back out.
Scroll back out?
Well, go in and blow it up a little bit more so we can. Yeah, a little bit. I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's been a very long day. Should I scroll up or down?
Just move it up a little bit.
You mean to show more of the south?
Yeah, good. Uh-huh. So you see B1 on the bottom. That was, I believe that was one of the holes with water in it. And then we go up to the, and you see that it's kind of running a line just at a kind of a topographic contour of sorts. Mm-hmm. And I think B14 at the top of that was the other one that had water in it.
Okay, so B1 and B14.
And then TP9, which is pretty close to being in line to that.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that was the only place that they actually found that that water. So it doesn't, it saying that that's an extensive thing, just that seems really sketchy to me. It's not an interpretation, I think, that is really supportable.
I see. So when she said there was an extensive, an extensive regime or field of perched groundwater, that's not necessarily supported by this particular data.
Well, that's the inference I took because she mentioned, this water can come from miles away. And I don't see, I don't see that. If we were drilling down, and screening at 700 feet, we'd be in the regional aquifer, and we would, yes, that would be extensive because every hole you drilled would hit it.
Uh-huh. I see. So the point is these are far away from wetland P2, so it's not evidence of an extensive perch groundwater table flowing that distance to P2.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable way to put it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some other holes that were dug in and around P2. And we could look at those.
And are we referring now to the newer report that was submitted last Friday?
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah.
This is the Terra report dated November 2023. I don't have the day in front of me.
Right. Yes. November 28th, 2023. This was the supplemental subsurface exploration report prepared by Ms. Deckler's colleague, Mr. Sadler, and submitted last Friday.
Right. So I guess pop up the plan view, if you would, figure one.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do with those, I go through the boring logs and then I, you know, put little summaries next to each hole. And then I try to see what's going on in the subsurface there. So what I want to do is, first of all, clump 101, 102, and 103 together. Because Mr. Sadler logged those all with alluvium colluvium. As Ms. Decker described it, a material moving down from the steeper slope to the east on Hillbend.
Mm-hmm. So these generally follow the hillside down from the high end of the spline road down towards the wetland.
Yeah, it looks to me like they're pretty much in the northwest southeast swale. There's also another swale from the that goes from north a little bit further north down towards 103. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the main. They put the holes in the main swale there.
Okay.
But then when you hit 104, then you find about, let's see, 4-5+ feet of recessional outwash. And then when you go over to 105 on the other side of the wetland, there's 4.5 feet of recessional outwash. So before I go into the road, you know, I read that as consistent with what we talked about before. We talked about a relatively thin 1-4 foot recessional outwash layer that blankets the Crabapple Creek drainage. And I talked about the fact that 115 from the Zipper report told us it was a little bit west of these borings, maybe close to 106, but it didn't tell us how far up the hill it went. So now we know at least goes up as far as 104 and 105. And, you know, the fact that P2 is there, you know, suggests maybe it goes at least as far as the east end of P2. And whether it continues under the alluvium colluvium, you know, I don't know. Can't say. It's possible, but not necessarily so.
Okay.
106 was more mixed. There was the silty sand on the top, and you know, we saw the dark colors of it in the pictures, and then 2 feet of alluvium, and then a foot of recessional outwash. You know, this being a disturbed area, it makes it hard for me to really say exactly what's going on there, because there may have been some movement of soils out and some movement of soils back in. You know, the when they built these, I hate to call them roads, skid roads, logging tracks, they were using and I know this mostly from my experience at the North Kitsap Heritage Park to the west. This wasn't road building activity. They were just taking local materials and pushing them into low spots. And so it's kind of unpredictable what you might get. So it's interesting. There is a little bit of recessional outwash there. Maybe that goes down another couple, 3 feet. It's just hard for me to interpret there. But the big picture here is that these holes make total sense to me, and they fit the picture I described in my earlier testimony.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, the information presented so far in terms of the new borings that we just received last Friday are relatively consistent with what you had earlier testified to.
It is. And it's probably worth noting that the recessional outwash that we see in 104, 105, and probably 106, and 115 on the other side of the culvert suggests that there's a hydrogeologic connection there, that there's a functional connection between these two wetlands. The water is going to move through underneath that road in the recessional outwash. And it's probably also worth noting that Terra's borings and test pits were kind of up the hill, like I described on the west side, whereas the Zipper investigation hit more of the valley. So that's why we see a lot of recessional outwash in their holes, and probably, you know, not so much in Terra's holes up higher on the hill.
Mm-hmm. And so their conclusion here, Mr. Sadler's conclusion, that wetland P2 is predominantly fed by direct rainfall, runoff, shallow interflow from adjacent areas, and shallow interflow from the recessional outwash deposits. Is that consistent with what you had said before?
Well, yes and no. Okay. So one thing you got to be really careful about here, especially for non-technical people, is what is shallow, what is deep. Mm. You know, you need to get a little bit more specific about what you're talking about. So his first item there, he said a primary source is direct rainfall, direct precipitation, surface water runoff, and then shallow interflow. So I'm taking shallow interflow there to mean, you know, that the surface water is getting down and it's working into the maybe talking about the top foot or so. And yeah, I think that's really an important mechanism, and that, you know, water that gets into that top foot is also going to get into the recessional outwash when it, where that is present. The next line about water, shallow interflow from recessional on the north side of the wetland. You know, I think this is a little sketchy, and towards that, you got to bring in the concepts of heterogeneity and preferential pathway. When you start looking at a small area like they're doing here at P2, you got to understand that glacial geology is highly variable. You know, just like that one hole that suddenly switched from a sand outwash to a more silty outwash. And it varies, you know, in all three dimensions. And because of that, you get preferential pathways. And it's been determined, especially by modeling, that most of the water moving in these kind of subsurface areas finds the most permeable area. You know, it'd go through the gravels. If it was surrounded by sand, it'd go through the sand. If it was surrounded by silt, but it's unpredictable from just not having, impossibly detailed knowledge of the subsurface. And so to say that one hole that had a little bit of wet in it, that saw some seepage, is indicative of a larger pattern of flow coming from the north, I think that's stretching the data beyond what is reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
On that, yep. One.
Now, in your earlier testimony on the very first day, I think it was the first day, you had talked about being involved in watershed studies.
Yes.
And did those studies involve figuring out the contributions of subsurface flow to various surface water bodies?
Yeah, I mean, when you do a watershed study, you have to look at all components of the water cycle. You know, precipitation is primary. Any streams flowing in or out are important. And then you've got to look at how those streams behave over the terrain in terms of gaining, losing reaches, and then you've got to look at what's going on in the groundwater. Mm-hmm. So you do end up having to look at a whole suite of information. And in addition to that, you got to look at the meteorological impacts of impacts on groundwater, for example, especially evapotranspirations from plants.
Mm-hmm. And now one of the, or I think it was the last question that I asked Ms. Decker was that if I were her client and I came to her and I told her that I wanted to figure out where the water feeding P2 came from and whether or not this road would interfere with that, she told me that she would say, do a groundwater study.
Well, I totally agree with Ms. Decker on that. And you would have to pepper the area in and around P2 with piezometers, basically, small diameter wells, and you'd put them in at different elevations and then watch that over the course of a year and see how the water levels go up and down and how they respond to precipitation events. And yeah, it would be a great master's project.
Madam Examiner, I think it's 5:30. This would be probably a good place to stop.
Yes, thank you. I was kind of keeping an eye on Ms. Liao. Okay, well, then just kind of again for estimate purposes, when we recommence at 11 a.m. on Friday the 22nd, we will continue with your directive, Mr. Lubisher. Then we'll go into cross from the county and the applicant. And then you've got one more witness to call, right?
That's it.
Okay. All right. Anything else that we need to address procedurally before we go offline?
I just wanted to make sure. I think that in terms of the exhibits that I have that have been admitted, I want to double check. I know that Mr. Telegin sent in two exhibits that he had intended to present. I don't know if those have been admitted. I guess I want to be real clear because I want to get everything ready for the next go around about what's been admitted and what's not been admitted. Yes, I don't know. I don't think Mr. Telegin has presented those two yet. Have you?
I have not. They'll be okay. Just a little bit later in Mr. Lubisher's testimony.
All right.
Okay, so yeah.
Then I'll probably go through. I will put together a list of what I think we've got, what I think I've got, and then everyone can. I'll send them forward it to you. You can look at it. We can kind of weigh in and make sure that everything is straight and squared away before the next hearing. Because, like I said, it won't be me. It'll be Caitlin clerking again. So I want to make sure everything is all set and ready.
Okay. Would you send out your list, Ms. Walston, to the parties?
I would forward it to the examiner first, make sure it matches up with what she's got, and then we can forward it after that. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Back to parties. And then you can take a look.
Very good.
Okay.
That's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Amanda. Really appreciate your help with this. All right. Anything else?
I don't think so.
Well, enjoy the weekend and the next week. We'll see you next Friday, 2 weeks from today.
All right. Okay. Thanks, everyone.
All right.
Thank you. Bye.